let me just introduce you really quickly, everybody. Welcome to the Yoga of War podcast. I'm here today with IDF Sergeant Major. Let's be clear. If I am Mailspin, who is dropping in the middle of his service in order to bring us a live update, actually from Gaza. Thank you so much, Chaim. Tell us what's going on in Gaza, and then can we get into a little bit about Iran and what's going on there?
Yeah, well, you literally might see me have to try to run ahead. You know, when you're out in the field, it's not like all the civilians in Israel. Bomb shelters are very much encouraged right now to be in bomb shelters because of the bombardment of, and they have some missiles that are like Mach 12. I heard 10 or 12, which is 12 times the speed of sound. I'm telling you what, it is wild. And those missiles are called hypersonic missiles. They have them in China. They have them in different places. And they've been supplied with them. And they're taking down buildings. 61 buildings hit. So we're in a very crazy time right now. And on top of that, we're at the sword and iron war. And again, yes, I'm a sergeant major with the IDF, Israel Defense Force, emphasis on defense. And I've been at it for 618 consecutive days.
618 consecutive days?
Today.
And today happens to be Father's Day, and you happen to be a father. We're going to be having like a person-to-person conversation with Chaim in a couple weeks today, because he has such limited time. I want to just talk about Tachlis. Let's talk Tachlis. Has anything changed in Gaza because of what's going on with Iran?
All of the quote-unquote innocent civilians, you see them cheering. Just cheering with glee and joy that Israel is being struck. You know, it's not like they're trying to, again, even a segment is not trying to build a society alongside Israel in peace. Their one goal, they've been so brainwashed into wanting the utter destruction of Israel. And it's not because they ever met a Jew. We had left in 2005. It's just because their brainwashed ideology. That comes from Iran, the head. And, the Houthis, same ideology. Their flag says death to America, death to Israel. Their flag of the Houthis, Ansar Allah, they're called. And we're seeing the same ideology has, an infestation of cockroaches taken over southern Lebanon. And I've been there as well, fighting them. You probably know we lost one of our guys hours ago in a RPG blast, a grenade blast from the Hamas. And before that, a bunch of Yahalom guys were taken out by Hamas. They planted a Shawaz bomb underneath the floor of the building that we were in, and they took the building down, killing. So I've just been going to funeral after funeral after funeral, and it's been a very hard time. But you can hear I speak English, and yes, I made Aliyah 25 years ago. But I want to just focus quickly on Iran and the of the octopus with the Hamas and the Hezbollah and the Houthis and the Badr force and so many others, Islamic Jihad. And we're seeing that right now, there's really no way peace and security to return without dealing with the head of the snake, the head of the octopus. You know, octopuses, you could cut off a leg and it has its own brain. I mean, in the actual octopus, and it can live for a while. Houthis, Hezbollah, they can live for a while, and over time, if you completely cut off the supply chain, they're always trying to resupply.
Can I ask you a question about that really quickly? Because, yes, head of the snake, head of the octopus, we hear this all the time. But from what I understand, Qatar is also funding them as well. So seeing as Qatar is this frenemy, and there's nothing we could do about Qatar other than maybe try to negotiate diplomatically. So let's say perfect world, Iran, head of the snake, head of the octopus, whatever you want to call it, cut off. We still have Qatar. How does that affect things?
When you have the Middle East, unlike what you know, the West understands, they are tribal. There's three pillars. One is Islam, and there's interpretation of radical Islam or not. And then there's family. Family is another one. Family and really the last one, money, is really all about strengthening your family. If the family's dishonored, you kill the one who dishonored the family. Everything for the honor of the family and for the jihad or for the interpretation of Islam. And so what happens is if you can say, like Saudi Arabia says, sure, we're Muslim, but we don't believe we have to interpret jihad in the way that Iran is interpreting it, and we can interpret it in a different way, and we can focus on the family, honor of the family, wealth for the family, instead of blow up the entire world. There's two ways you can go with this, but we're hoping that the whole, we're believing that the whole world is going to see that crime doesn't pay, terror doesn't pay. They're going to see that they need to go with the focus on the family, build your empire like Dubai, like the Emirates.
Sure.
And make that your goal, which is more of an American aligned goal than is jihad.
But do you think Qatar will be willing to go in that direction is really what I'm saying. So let's say
Indonesia is another. Indonesia is a very large, mostly Muslim area. They've chosen that way. You don't see crime, terror coming from Indonesia. They've chosen that way. So I have high hopes that if we don't compromise, if we don't ceasefire, no ceasefire victory in the Middle East, you need to show strength and a lot of strength. And the only way to do that is not ceasefire, because ceasefire is looked at as a capitulation, as a weakness, as their mandate from their jihad mandate has beat the infidel West. That's the way they see it.
Sure.
Yes, they're weak and we're winning. But sure. That's what has is we need to just complete this, get our heart and see this to completion.
Well, since the invasion in Gaza is mostly ground, and because what's going on in Iran obviously is not going to happen from the ground, at least we can't imagine a scenario right now where it's going to, because we're talking about mostly air force in Iran and in ground forces in Gaza. Is the war in Gaza affected in any way or changed in any way by what's going on in Iran right now?
Essentially, because it's their suppliers, it's almost like their dad. Let's look at Iran like Hamas's dad, in a way. Okay, so when they see their dad is killing 11 people last night, 200 injuring 200 last night, the whole sky filled with rockets, everyone hiding. Now, 11 isn't a million. 11 is 11, and four children. And when they see that, they are emboldened so much that they'll go and start doing, instead of waving that white flag of surrender, saying, you know what, we have to hudna. The Arabic word is hudna, which is that word that means we want to jihad, but we don't have the capability to jihad right now. So we're going to hudna, which is a stalemate, a regrouping time. Doesn't really mean peace. There is no peace in a jihadist mindset. There's no peace. It's just you have time to regroup, rebuild, rearm, like Muhammad did, and then reattack again. So in order to stalemate space, they need to achieve hudna, which means they cannot be re-inspired to shoot RPGs, which is what happened last night. So they shot an RPG on our guys. They took down buildings on our guys in Gaza yesterday. And so it's not good. That's what I'd say is we need to show strength.
Okay. So, but manpower wise, because we're talking about two different
fronts.
We're talking about Air Force versus ground power. It doesn't really.
Yeah. No, we've been in a seven front war. And
yeah.
And Samaria, Judea and Samaria. Some call it the West Bank mistakenly. But
isn't it on lockdown?
Say again?
Isn't Judea and Samaria on lockdown right now?
I'm saying we've been fighting a seven front war.
Yeah.
Which in Judea and Samaria, there has been every kind of laboratory, every kind of explosive, every kind in Jenin, Qalqilia, in everywhere throughout, you have every kind of terror activity and arising. No, not lockdown. It's now we have, after work 618 days, we have reached some sort of a hudna there where they're saying we need to regroup that exact thing. It's not because someone said the words lockdown. No, it's because we've been so strong, so unrelenting, tireless, so fearless, like lions rising, that they in Judea and Samaria, Kalkilia, in Nablus, Jenin, everywhere, that we had to do that. Same thing actually goes for Yemen. We've just taken out another high-profile leader of Yemen, and also their missile stockpile is not that big anymore because we've hit them again and again and again. They're having to Hudna because they just don't have enough. So they only shot one missile at us last night, only one. How come they haven't shot 100? Because they're getting low because of our unrelenting and fearless stance against terror.
So it seems like coming from Iran, right? So ironically, right, this is supposed to be their most vicious attack, and they've certainly caused a lot more damage. But last year we saw two attacks that were each 300 plus missiles. Now we're seeing 100, 150. Are they running out of munitions? And is Israel going to be able, I know you don't answer what you can't answer, but Israel mostly took out the Hezbollah munitions before they were able to be shot. I know that there's some of that going on in Iran, but Lebanon is this big and Iran is this big. So what are the chances that we're going to be able to take out enough munitions that we're going to be able to finish this war and they've got nothing left to send over?
Like we've seen in Hezbollah territory, which is southern Lebanon, like we've seen in Houthi territory, which is in, they've taken over Yemen, like we've seen in Gaza too, the result, the proof is in the pudding, and the results are there. What is possible? How do you get there? Well, you go through a very, very, very arduous and dangerous period. Now, we got to go to 1979 just to even see what has happened here. The Shah was a Western leader, democracy, but he believed in democracy. Western values, selling oil to Israel, gas to Israel, the price of gas was for better. And then you have this jihadist, really it's an apocalyptic, that word apocalyptic, end of days scenario. A Mahdi, one of 12, they're 12 are Shiites. So that one of the 12, the last of the 12, will come out of occultation and he will then kill all the Jews. And you, all the Jews, all the Israelis and all the infidels and all the, whoever doesn't bow the knee to their understanding. That started in 1979, and in 1979 you have these chants, which death to America, death to Israel. In every speech, notice almost every speech in Arabic, he'll say, you know, and he will have great victory. Death to America, death to Israel. And then we're going to get more missiles. Death to America, death to Israel. They chant this constantly since 1979, and they meant it. And they tried to get their nuclear weapons back in the day. And instead, they tried to focus on progress instead of they themselves doing the dirty work. So since 1979, it built up more and more. You remember Netanyahu up there in the UN saying, it's dangerous. We've hacked into their mainframe. We have proof of their nuclear weapons. Please help. This is for decades. We got tired of hearing our prime minister go on and on about Iran and their bomb. And we're like, he's just crazy. We almost thought of Netanyahu until we realized, wait a minute. No, all the rest is noise. He's right on about this. And finally, we've got to the point where Hezbollah is weakened, Houthis are weakened, Hamas is weakened. They're not defeated. They're trying to regroup and rearm and Hudna. They're trying to rebuild, restock, and continue their great end of times apocalyptic jihadist dream. So what it is when we've gone in there, we did the same thing as we did with Lebanon. Took out as much as we could from there, including using the secret drone break anymore, a drone base, which was parked there, opened up. They went and flew and hit areas, which I can't tell you, but I can tell you that to get to them from within Iran is farther than coming from Israel to Iran, which is over 1,500 kilometers away. So within Iran is farther inside Iran than it is from coming from to Iran. And we've been able to hit all kinds of. But I would say their firing power, they still have estimated 2,000 more, you know, ballistic missiles, some of them intercontinental ballistic missiles. None of them are carrying a payload, a warhead, which is essentially nuclear. Because imagine even if a nuclear weapon was to explode in the stratosphere, even if it was there, it would the nuclear fallout would kill us all. I mean, it would be death to us, even if one of them. But imagine they had around uranium enriched in Fordu and Arak and enough water sites, enough centrifuges to produce 15 was an estimate that I heard within days. And therefore, that was just unacceptable. So I would say they're going to keep shooting us for the next 2 weeks or so. Airport probably going to be closed for the next week or so. I don't know. We'll see how quick we can get to that place where they can only fire two a day. And we'll say, yes, we're near that. We're near that place. I will say this is...
You went out. Yes.
Water reactor, IR, that we still need to strike. There's the Bushehr nuclear power plant, still need to strike.
Right.
There is Tehran, we need to strike. There's a lot of things that they're going to try to use. Gas fields, we need to use gas pipes, like the Asulia pipeline, petrochemical complex. Now, why do we need to do this? I'll tell you why. Even though China will be very mad, China from them fuel, I believe. I don't think it's from Saudi.
Yeah.
I believe. So they're not going to like this, but we have to do it. For example, the Kangan petrochemical, we need to take that out because that's how they also are getting, the missiles are supplied from China, but they have. So what's stopping them tomorrow from getting an airlift of missiles from China tomorrow of 100 mil? We're not blocking their airspace unless we bomb their airspace, their whole entire airport, which we're not going to do. So they could just land a billion missiles, and all they have to do now is maybe they're not going to have nuclear, but they can go and use all that fuel and start to make their missiles fly at us again.
But there's also the issue, of course, that Iran, the only industry they really have is gas, oil and gas. So if we cut off that supply on top of the sanctions that we already have, then, you can't create money out of air. I mean, you can, but that's how you get mass inflation, which is what brought Iran to the table in the first place, not this time, but for the JCPOA, was, these crippling sanctions. The Riyadh is worth like zero, but we get rid of their ability to produce oil. And so it's not just the tactical, but also the economic pain that they're going to feel that is going to ultimately...
We do know, though, sad to say, the reality is that failed. Obama's approach to Obama used the carrot and said, I will give you all this money. I'll make sure we unlock billions and billions and billions of dollars for you. And we're going to make sure there's no sanctions. So the carrot does not work for Iran.
Right.
Does not work. So now the stick, which was sanctioned, even Biden, right, had sanctions and then took the sanctions off. They put the sanctions on. It didn't work either. They rushed with JCPOA. It did not work. You're thinking a Western way of thinking is, hey, if their goal is the American dream, they want the American dream. And if we offer the American billions of dollars, they'll say, great, now I can get to my goal, the American dream. But if their goal is not the American dream, billions of dollars or even sanctions doesn't deter you from going to your actual dream, which for a apocalyptic mindset, it's very hard for people. I say it 1,000 times. People aren't getting it, though.
Yeah.
His goal is the ultimate destruction of America, destruction of Israel. And so I know some Americans are saying, well, hey, so you do what you want. We're going to just nice guy over here, and they'll like us Americans because we're the ones that are not getting involved. So they still getting it. You can give them $1 trillion. They're still going to try to kill
and
destroy.
But keep in mind, just so you know, I'm not as dumb as I look. I wasn't saying relieve sanctions. I'm saying that the more we destroy their oil, the more we cut off their money on top of the sanctions, because ultimately, you do need to have some sort of cash flow in order to support the war. I mean, let me ask you a question. Is it true that, and you could even clarify, all or most of their air defense systems. I know that they were already all or most destroyed last year, but now it sounds like they're gone. And if they're gone, does Israel literally have free reign that we could just do whatever we want and it can't be shot down? If you were a pilot today, how, on a scale of 1 to 10, how safe would you feel flying over Iran, dropping whatever you needed to drop?
Yeah. Okay. I'll answer the two questions though. The one is you might say there's sanctions and then there's crippling sanctions, which completely tank your whole entire country and make sure they cannot wage war at all. They cannot supply anyone. They cannot even supply themselves. They have to now go into emergency, just survival mode to even get through the day. That's what it is when you strike their gas. They can't even drive a car. When you strike even, let's say, a water plant, I'm talking even striking things which would be, everything stops and you go into survival mode, and they say, we definitely have to Hudna, which again, word is, grouping time. It's a jihadist understanding where they'll say, yeah, that's what we want. That's what we need. We do not need the mid-range. We need full crippling sanctions, which means striking even the gas, because otherwise they'll just continue the war because nothing else seemed to work. Trump, everybody tried everything that was possible. And now to answer your second question, though, is that's about the crippling sanctions. The second question is air dominance. Yes, even though Russia supplied them F-300s, S-400s, which are some of the best in the world, whether it was the drones that the Mossad placed, whether it's, and this makes Operation Grim Beeper look like child's play. Because this is so much bigger on a level where those drones were hidden in there and they were able to go and out missile launchers so that there was, we haven't even lost one plane. There's videos of our planes being shot. That's a video game. It's not real. So that's a video game play trying to act like shot. They haven't shot one of our planes down. And so we're at a place of, I'd say, of course, it's still dangerous that someone could RPG you or someone could use something, but we're way up, I'd say 8, where it's just air dominance over Tehran, not over the whole country, but at least over Tehran, which is a very big city. And I'm just hoping that they'll come to the table. They'll say, Trump, we are, call it Hudna. We are willing to stand down entirely. We will willingly let the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, come in and supervise the dismantling of any and all, Parchin, Fordu, Arak, Natanz, and even the, there was two more secret ones that are not known about, which we found. And we're willing to now have, let's call it, how you, the end of World War II with not, you had Germany receive, the Marshall Fund to rebuild.
Right.
So that would need an Arabic, Iranian, a Persian Marshall Fund to help them, because we don't want their country to be off the map by no means. That's not Israel's desire. Israel's desire really is to not have a nuclear weapon wiping us off the map ourselves. Right. That's all we want. And let me just say this, we love the people of Iran. Love them.
Yeah.
People here are Iranian Jews. They love the food. They love the dance. They love the culture. We love them. You don't like the Sith Lords, like in Star Wars. They dress in like fear and hate, and that's the way that leads to the dark side.
Okay.
Yes. So we need that to not be. It's really an indoctrination. It's really a way of thinking that is. I'm really hoping that is Reza Pahlavi.
Yeah. We all are.
Yes, in Israel, and he loves Israel. He could be part of the face of. He's the crown prince, son of the Shah. I believe he'd be a great future leader.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that it's true that we are watching history in the making, and I think that most people don't understand. And you alluded to it earlier. You talked about the Shah and the Western values, but what people don't always understand is that Israel and Iran were actually allies. I mean, they shared everything, not just like economic, diplomatic. They shared like missile defense. They shared like the things that you are unimaginable today. And the one thing I do like to say is that things can turn on a dime, and we always use that in terms of things can go bad. But things can also turn on a dime and go good. So there's right. no reason. But I think that honestly, personally, Apollo V is not the person who comes back. You know, we don't want to create a power vacuum either, wherein the Ayatollah and the mullahs run and something else worse, ISIS, whatever it is, comes in. And
I think we have to really look at international players, like look at Turkey, who's so much backing Iran. Turkey used to be a nice place. Turkey wasn't a place to get raped and robbed and beat up. It is now. There's those, that ideology, that again, that 12er jihadist, it creeps in, and it could happen anywhere. Everything. It could happen in America, Canada, France, England, Australia. It could happen anywhere. And it's creeped in to Turkey. Yeah. And get ready to fill that vacuum. Let's just say that there's a complete dismantling of all the Ayatollahs. There is no supreme leader. Then Turkey could jump in. I know that China wants that relationship. So they would say, sure, we don't care. The leader. We want that relationship with Iran, because there's like a flip side. There's dark matter. So you have the Russia, Iran, Turkey, you know, you have this axis, you know,
yes.
the opposite of what we live in, where we get our oil and our gas. And now the other thing is, in the vacuum, Iraq could rush the vacuum itself. There is a 250,000 person standing army. They are very strong with tanks, with planes, they're very strong, and they could take over. They could come at Israel. They haven't done this yet. Iraq could come at Israel, or they could come there and fill a vacuum. Are they better? Are they worse? This is the gamble of the. Say this to wrap up my whole thought is, we got a job to do.
Yeah.
What is the job we got to do as the military? It's not the job of a politician. The job of a politician is to I give them a deal, a better deal, a deal they can't refuse. Whatever, you know, that's a politician's role. The military role is, we will do what it takes, that's whatever, to ensure protection of citizens who've signed the social contract. They give us taxes, and I'm not even a career soldier. I run a charity called the Aliyah Center in the Galilee to help Arabs and Jews, but especially those who make Aliyah. Maybe one day you'll make Aliyah. You get food, clothing, shelter, everything with us at the Aliyah Return Center in the Galilee, North Israel. But my job as a soldier is to make sure I do everything that it takes to ensure that the citizens are protected, both on the border of Gaza, on the border of Lebanon, and wherever they are under this hellfire storm of missiles from apocalyptic jihadist group.
Do you think that Iran finally got Trump's message that, like, he's like, I told you, either you dismantle it or we do it for you? So first of all, do you think they finally are like, okay, this is serious. We need to come to the table and,
nope.
And hold on. And do you think that the obviously looming potential of America joining in and finishing this off? And I do want to say to everybody who says day in and day out, this is not America's fight. This is America's fight. This is a fight for the free world that tiny little Israel is fighting, and the whole world is cowering behind them, saying, yeah, no, you do the work, and then doing everything they can to throw Israel under the bus. We are living under such weird times, such Orwellian times, but I've been amazed to find out that every time it seems like Trump might be undermining us, it turns out that he and Bibi this whole time have been planning, like, we're going to say this and we're going to tell the world this, but we're going to do this. And on day 61, this is going to happen. Is America going to step in your best estimation, and finish off this job if they do not come to the table and agree to do it themselves?
I would say, when you look at other countries as examples, you look at how Belgium, not that long ago, had a state of emergency that said, we can't control our country. We've lost control of our country. You look at the amount of no-go zones. That means jihadist controlled areas in France. And they're like, we have no control of these areas. You look at England. You look at the protests on the 8th of October, 2023. We hadn't gone into Gaza yet. There was nothing to protest except yay for the murder of all of us, because we hadn't gone into Gaza at all. All we did is we were just massacred. We were reeling from that. And there were so many people. Now, the police can only do so much. I mean, you look at Netherlands. What's going on in Netherlands? All these riots. And then you have this called, what is it called? Accommodating or pandering to the jihadist mentality. Not standing strong. Not standing uncompromising, unrelenting, unwavering the way Israel does. Kind of pandering a little bit. And that's all they can do. They essentially don't have the manpower. You know, a friend of mine in the Netherlands said that they said, when you see someone on a train with a mask and smoke and throwing and then he has a club and he's beating people with a club while driving a motorcycle, then he rides onto tips a bus over with his tractor. We don't know how to do this. We don't know how to handle it. We half the guys don't care about the UK, and here in Netherlands we are not trained like you. We don't know. We're not trying to remember. We called it almost a pogrom, what happened to Jews there after that song in Amsterdam. And they said, it's not that we are trying to do a pogrom. We don't have the tools or training to handle this stuff. We don't know who's who. They switch clothes, they switch shirts. It's called guerrilla warfare. Now, we've had this for a long, long time. Now, the answer to you is, how soon is America wanting to jump in? There could be a situation that America isn't as united as you think. They might not want to risk. They might want to do everything to mitigate the risks of the whole streets. I mean, they're doing as it is right now in so many cities, protesting over what? Over what are they protesting?
They're protesting over Jews existing, if we want to be honest.
Yeah, Jews defending themselves, but they have all this thing about, no, it's you don't deport illegal citizens according to law that are right. There. Don't deport them. We're down all of Los Angeles, burn down, and remember with BLM, burn down all of Manhattan, break all the windows. So you're at a place where the police will not be able to handle it soon. So it's like the last ditch effort. So I feel that behind the scenes, and I'm maybe speaking, but I feel that behind the scenes there is a not wanting to take that card all the way, play that card all the way to the end now, because maybe it's going to take some time to rebuild sanity in the West. They've lost their sanity and their patriotism.
Yes.
To even think that democracy is just handed to you, freedom is just handed to you, and somebody else will do it. No. Every single person in Israel, even if they are Down syndrome, even if they are a cripple, they have to get in there, turn on the sprinklers, help with the cooking, fold a parachute, do something, because everybody, this is the people's army, it really is. And we all have to chip in.
Right.
We are all missile, intercontinental ballistic missile. Doesn't look if someone's an Arab Israeli, doesn't look if someone's a Druze Israeli, a Christian Israeli, or a Jewish Israeli. This is not the Jewish Defense Force. Nope. Right. Israel Defense Force. All together in this, we all gotta do our part. So my answer to you is, I don't think America is gonna want to step in. The answer is no.
At
I think
all? They're gonna do everything. Ever?
I think everything they can to not step in at all, everything they can.
But what if they can't? I mean, what? So he really has said in Trump has said in unequivocal terms that they cannot have any sort of nuclear infrastructure. So at some point he needs to say, this is the point. And we know that Israel doesn't have the B-2 bombers. Can I ask you a quick question? Israel has 2,000-pound bombs, not the 30,000-pound bombs that America has. This is basic math, but I don't know if it works out the way that I'm about to say it. Do 2,000-pound bombs have the same effect as one 30,000-pound bomb?
I'll tell you what it is. You're talking about Bunker Buster. Now, I deal with tunnels. I'm a sergeant major at the Yahalom, which is the Combat Engineer Corps Elite Unit for Special Missions.
Yeah.
My job for 18 days has been mostly finding the tunnels, mapping the tunnels. Finding them is very hard.
And scary.
You got to dismantle them without killing hostages, without dying yourself, and without being, you know, blown up or a mine on the ground or a tripwire or TATP or TNT or Shawaz bombs or flame mines or tripwires or sound activated or infrared or. You gotta not die. So it's a very, very dangerous. I actually studied at the beginning because we started a tunnel warfare unit of Yahalom. We started that. We were the first team to do that. Back 20 years. I've been in the Army for 20 years now.
Wow.
Service. My normal job, again, is running the Aliyah Return Center charity. Check it out, aliyahreturncenter.com, and see Aliyah Return Center.
I'll put it in the show notes. Yeah.
How would I do normally? But I talked to my friend. I said, what do you do? He said, well, I stack books. I'm a librarian. I'm like, what? You're blowing up buildings. What? You're not a career soldier? And they're like, no. I go, I work in the I'm a school teacher. I work at the bank. You know. So to answer the question though, you finally find the tunnels and you gotta dismantle them. Now there's ways. You send the robot in, you send the bomb dog in if he's not too scared. Some of these dogs die, are murdered from us. We have to then do a funeral for the dogs, and so on. So I've just been doing this for a long time. So now what it is how do you destroy them now? Do you put in certain areas? Because if you just blow up the entrance, they could just dig around that collapsed entrance and use it as an attack tunnel to go and kidnap Gilad Shalit. That was a friend of my brother's who was kidnapped back in the day.
Yeah, we all know his story.
Yeah, we was in terrorist exchange for one Israeli. And that's what Sinwar was counting on. Yihyeh Sinwar and Mohammed Sinwar, his brother, were counting on the tunnels being a hiding place while they wait it out and then just get all 1,000. Each one is valued at 1,000, which is horrible. So I'm surprised that missiles haven't fallen while we're talking, because, I mean, literally, you would see them falling all around and me hiding. So it's amazing that we're talking this long for the past 37 minutes and haven't had a single strike. It's been nonstop. I don't want you to feel like it's just a peaceful life.
I don't feel that way at all.
So anyway, to answer your question, do you need these bunker bombs? Because it depends how deep they are in the earth and how much cement, how much rebar you have to do. And you calculate as best you can the information that you have. And sometimes you can do, like we've done, 40 bombs, one after the other.
Right.
To take, we took out Hassan Nasrallah in Lebanon.
Right.
We took out in Iran, which wasn't what triggered all this, because they were saying death to America since 1979. They were building nuclear weapons for decades. Not what triggered that. What triggered their ideology? I want to be very clear on that. Israel didn't start all this. Israel defended ourselves after we were massacred. Then we defended ourselves after we were attacked by Lebanon. Then we defended after we were attacked by Houthis in Yemen, who are illegally occupying Yemen. Then Iran attacked us with Operation True Promise. We took out a leader of Hamas that was there in Iran, near an embassy, not in an embassy, near. And we took him out in a surgical strike in Iran. And then they launched Operation True Promise 1. What was that, in April 2024? And then Operation True Promise 2 in whatever that was, October 2024. And now it's June right now. And they've launched Operation True Promise 3, which is completely horrible. So I hope that answers you about the math that it takes to, it's either multiples of one, depending on the depth, or it is a bunker buster, which there's different types. Take a while to get into the different types of
explosives that he
has. But the only thing that's going to really win this is a change of heart, a change of ideology, a change of teaching, education. And let me just solidify the point. When we left in 2005 from Gaza, moving 21 villages, little cities, out of Gaza, 21, that at that point, they would never met a Jew. They would not know what Jews are. All they know is that's the only country that's giving them jobs, water, food, electricity. they have these gorgeous beachfront properties, and I've been in them. I didn't watch a YouTube. I've been inside. Gorgeous. Not all the houses are gorgeous, but many are. Beautiful, stunning. I mean, ornate. There's the gold market. There's all kinds of restaurants and barbershops, fancy cars. It is what was. What was. So for anyone to mistakenly slander and to lie about Israel and say, oh, it's an open-air prison. Oh, it's a concentration camp. They obviously wouldn't see the houses are nicer than the Jewish people's houses here. I mean, there's some nice houses. But they have amazing, amazing houses and amazing life there on the beachfront. But they decided just because of ideology, only because of their teaching in their school, not because they met a Jew. The only Jews they met were wonderful ones that gave them tons of money when they came to work and work in Tel Aviv. And they met kind Jews who just checked them for bombs at the checkpoint. Sure, come on in and work. Did they get to go work? Did they get to go work in Egypt? Did they get to go work in Jordan? Did they get to work in any Muslim country? No. They blocked them off because they know how dangerous they are. Because they know what they did to King Hussein of Jordan. They tried to assassinate him. Black right. Remember that happened on them. Because they tried to kill the king, the one guy who took them in Jordan, a fellow Muslim, he took him in, and they have you have this Black September, the assassination plot. He's like, get out of here. I'm going to shoot you because how dare you? So anyway, they're dangerous, but we decided to be nice to them. So the point is, look what can happen from bad parenting. This right. can happen in this country. It can happen in Norway. You could be walking through Sweden, and you meet a person just because of letting what is called the criminals of the Muslim world in and not penalizing them effectively enough, you can find yourself in a situation where you have a straight up Gaza scenario inside ISIS.
Yeah, it's coming. Will this war with Iran affect the hostage situation in any way? It seems like that's been put on, like, for example, like, we can't deal with hostage negotiations right now because we've got this going on. Or obviously the threat the other day with Matan Zangawar saying, if you come near him, we're going to kill him. And the IDF actually saying, hey, we're not trying to save him. Like, the IDF is literally being put in a position where they have to aver that they are not trying to save any hostages, which is a sick position. It sounds like the negotiations are basically paused. With what's going on in Iran, is that going to help or hurt the hostages, or is it a totally different story?
Okay, so I would say, because you're asking me,
yes. that
they're very wrong, in my opinion, way of life. And that is just, you know how you go to a restaurant, someone hands you a menu and they say, here, this is what we have on the menu. Would you like 1, 2, 3, or 4? This is what a lot of the West has been doing for the Hamas. Hey, Hamas, what would you like today? Would you like to release one of the prisoners, or instead, would you rather us do this? How can we capitulate to give you what you want? Whatever you want, Hamas, it's whatever you want, because we know that we want our hostages back. So just tell us, pick something on the menu. You don't like this today. Maybe tomorrow we can offer you this on the menu. Okay, that is one way of doing things. And it's just, what did you say? This many people died? Children? Right. Well, that's a total lie. Oh, but we're going to repeat your talking points and offer you anything you want. So that's one way of doing life. And that, I don't think that's a good way of doing life. I think the best way is to say, look, we're going to tell you, there is no menu.
Exactly. Give me that.
We're going to tell you what's going to happen. You are going to, you have three options. We're gonna give you this. We're not looking at your choices. You're gonna tell us. We're gonna tell you. Here's what it is. You can either surrender. You can leave. We'll fly you safe and sound to any country you want that will receive you. You could surrender. You can leave to any country that'll receive you, or else. That's surrender, leave, or else. Surrender, you leave, or else. And we're gonna get the hostages. We're going to get them. If you want to murder them, you could murder them today. You could murder them tomorrow. But you're going to say, well, we're going to murder them. Well, you've already murdered so many of them anyway. We want them to be alive, and we're going to get them. But we're going to get them by sticking to our three, which is you surrender, you leave or. And meanwhile, I would suggest while we're doing one of those three, that you don't kill the hostages, that you give them to us, because that way you will have a survive. But if you just kill them because we're advancing and doing our goals, and then you know you're evil anyway. You don't trust evil people. If someone breaks into your house and says, "I'm going to murder you," and you're like, but if I do anything you want, then will you delay your murder and leave me alive for a little bit longer?" And they'll say, "You know what? Fine, I'll keep you alive for a little bit longer because you're useful to me right now." That is called capitulate terror. You just fight the person. You say you just fight and fight until the person either surrenders or else. And that is what we want to do. I believe we should do. And I think that they will respect the unrelenting pressure. And they'll say, "You know what? Take your hostages. We see that we're about to be ended. We're getting the or else, because we didn't really, so now we're getting we didn't surrender. So now we're getting the or else option. We don't like it. Take them, please take them alive. Just leave, fly us somewhere, you know?"
Mm-hmm.
What? And I really should open their border. If they're any kind of decent people, which I think they are, they should open their border. You could have an area the size of Gaza just over there and say, "Everybody, we'd like everybody to move out to there for a while we clean up all this mess. We want you safe and sound. We don't want to die. Nobody, Hamas, everybody, all of you, just move to that section, which is the same size as Gaza, just down the beach. We'll set up their massage areas. You'll have food areas. You'll have all kinds of stuff. It's fenced in, so they don't want them to Egypt. But they're there along the beach, same size place as Gaza. And it's going to take us some time here to remove all this rubble, to remove everything. Now, whoever wants to come back and dwell in peace, we'll have to prove that. We're going to need to see a picture of you, give you an ID. Who are you? You're not Hamas? We're going to keep an eye on you. Come on back and then get the Emirates, to rebuild.
I think from my perspective, from Los Angeles, the challenge, the way I see it, is that Trump gave this Gaza plan, right, in that famous meeting with Netanyahu, and then Netanyahu has run with it, but I feel like Trump has dropped it. So I'm afraid that Israel is now going to wind up with a football they didn't intend to catch.
You're saying that Israel feels like we're on our own, even though America.
No. I'm saying it seems to me that Netanyahu thinks that Trump is going through with the plan. And I think that Trump has long forgotten. He even said it. Not literally, but he's like on to bigger and better things. I feel like he just sort of threw it out there to start the discussion. But Netanyahu's like, "We're going with the Trump plan. We're gonna go ahead.
It's the only plan that anyone's ever presented that makes sense, because other capitulating to the terrorists, we've seen how that goes in 2005. Everyone that says Palestinian state, what do you call what they had when there was not a Jew? The Oslo Accords, all completely no Jews in there. They got yanked out by their hair. 21 cities of Jewish people were dragged out. That's when I went in the army. That's my first experience of the army, seeing Jews dragged out by their hair out of Gaza. And I was like, "What is going on?" But that didn't bring peace, did it?
No, nothing. But what happens, so for people who don't understand, Israel is smaller than New Jersey and Gaza is like 2 miles. I mean, it's this tiny little strip in the corner. So when he's talking about moving people to that same strip, like in Egypt, the point I'm making, Chaim, is that proximity wise, this is less than kicking the can. This is like kicking the can an inch. So you're going to have the same population, just like.
Oh, I didn't finish the plan. The plan is you bring them back. They don't stay there forever.
No. I know. But I'm saying that in the plan of moving them into the Sinai, into some area. Yep. They're still going to be so close to Israel, and Egypt doesn't want them. Egypt is afraid of having them in their borders. They have, as you said, they have more security between their border with Gaza than Israel does. So
what are you, that we that you fly them out or ship them out to another country that's willing to receive them, like Libya or Sudan or Somalia. Sure, those are all that have been explored a bit and could be explored further. I'm not against that. I'm not disagreeing with you.
That's yeah, but look at what happened with Yemen, though. I mean, I don't think we thought they were going to be any sort of like viable player in this. So, and also what, like you said, Turkey is building a whole new ring of fire. And I personally think that the Abraham Accords are the only chance. I think that we need the ring of fire extinguishers.
Yeah, make a deal with people who do not have the same deal parameters. If they want your death and destruction from the river to the sea, which means that's every part of Israel, pretty much is from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea. So that's where we live. That's where the whole country exists, with more legitimacy than any country on the earth, international law, to exist. Not just in the League of Nations in 1921, not just in the United Nations, where the whole world votes for this thing, and approved in the San Remo, the Balfour Declaration, with even the Arabs present, even all the world powers, including Japan, all present. The international law is like, this is Israel. It's no longer a Roman named old Roman or old British or old Turkish swath of land that covers Jordan and Syria. It's now Syria, Jordan, Israel, you know, Egypt. There's lines now, and you can't go back to having the whole thing Turkish Palestine or British Palestine or Roman Palestine or whatever, you know. So it's people aren't getting that. And I think that we need to change the mindset. So someone's mindset is all Jews die from within Israel. And then you're like, let's make a deal. Maybe, you know, can you come some of the direction? No, you can't any direction with someone who says their goal is all Jews die in Israel. You can't negotiate at all. You can't exchange words with such a person. You can't. You shouldn't. It would be despicable to exchange words with such a person. You say, let's skip that person entirely, quote unquote, the Gazans. Now we need to go and see if there's someone else who interprets the jihadism, doesn't interpret jihadism in the same way, such as Saudi Arabia, such as UAE. And hopefully that will sway ones that could become extremists. You said Qatar. Qatar, could they be very, start interpreting every, you're right, is the danger exists everywhere for that interpretation. It does exist, no matter how you look at it. So you have to keep the keep that from happening. I'm not saying that there should be Arabic school teachers who are observing, policing, and Arabic mosque goers that are policing any and all sermons on Friday, which scream death to all the Jews, and saying, I'm going to report. I'm not saying that's what I would do, but I'm not saying that. I mean, there needs to be a real eye on the ball when it goes to these mosques on Friday screaming death to Israel. And it starts having that in your whole childhood. So it needs to change. And the Abraham Accords will be
the change. If Pahlavi comes back in Iran and Iran joined the Accords, Saudi Arabia joined the Accords, I mean, it does look like viable that Lebanon and Syria might be joining the Accords. I mean, I think that I think remarkable things are happening. And I've kept you for such a long time.
As we end is even Trump, even all leaders that feel they know the Middle East, it would be really good to talk, even with the Gaza plan that Trump suggested. It's the only workable plan that I've seen yet in the whole history of this whole thing. But I'll just say this, is we got to really check ourselves that we don't think we understand what a hamula even is, a family structure where you're willing to kill your own brother or sister if you feel the family honor has been in some way, you know, and you're willing to jihad to your death, that your whole family is pardoned and gets, you know, you have to be able to really, really understand that that's the driving force and not money or Starbucks or the American dream or even a beautiful Gaza nope, not the driving force. People can really get that in the breath. That's the first step to doing something that makes some kind of sense.
I'm just curious, did you ever study like Gazan culture? I mean, not as a soldier who's experiencing it, but did you ever academically study this?
Yeah, so I, not only am I a sergeant major with the Combat Engineer Corps Elite Unit and run the charity Aliyah Return Center, I also study in government diplomacy, history of the Middle East, counterterrorism from the Reichwin University, one of the best ones in the Middle East for understanding really what the radicalization, how a person says, just go to this chat room. They're just going to ask you to swastika synagogue. That's all. That's all because your people need their honor restored. Golden age of Islam. And all you got to do is film yourself, take a picture of it, send it on to this encryption. The whole thing, you know, I have studied it and it's something that can happen in any country.
Yeah.
And people say, wake up, wake up, wake up. What does that look? What does waking look like? That is the question we need to get to. How do we do something different than what we're doing now? Do something different than we're doing now because we won't have much chance next
time. Yeah. Chaim, it's been an hour it's Father's Day, and I know that unfortunately you're not with your family. I wish you a very, very
thanks for having me.
It's been my absolute honor, and hopefully we can do more of these. And thank you for the extraordinary and unbelievable service that you have offered to Am Yisrael. Because when I say Am Yisrael from Los Angeles, I'm a part of that nation, and I do, and I hope you all in the IDF know that. Those of us, I never go out. I've got my bracelet, my necklace, I've got the pin, I've got all the things, but I just want you to know because those of us in the diaspora do not take for granted the sacrifices and the risks that you and the IDF have made for us. And sometimes I wake up and, you know, yesterday it was my niece's graduation and the whole family's together. And I'm like, we don't deserve that. Not we don't deserve this, but it's like there are people like you who are risking their lives so that people like us can celebrate our mazel. So God, like, just bless you, bless the IDF, bless Israel, and remember everybody that when we say that Israel wants peace, peace is not something that Israel can have by itself. When Israel says it wants peace, it means we want peace for our neighbors as well. This is Am Yisrael. And it's unfortunate that it has to sometimes take the form of military might, but the goal in Israel is always shalom. If people know one word in Hebrew, it's shalom. There's a reason for that. We live and sadly sometimes die in the pursuit of peace. This is Hatikva. This is why Israel was created. This is what Zionism is. It's a safe and secure place where Jews can live in peace.
Yes, and I'll just say this as a sergeant major, I'm going to be a little bold here. To whoever's watching, I'm going to give you an order as a sergeant major. Your order is your peace. Operate from a place of peace. Don't get all angry. Operate from a place of peace for peace. Even if you're fighting a war, do it in peace for peace. That's the only way to bring a change. Take that moment and pray, and you will feel that peace.
Thank you so much, Chaim. You're going to be back on the show in a few weeks. We're going to be talking less tactical and more personal about things like peace, how we pursue it, why we pursue it, what it means to be a Jewish soldier, and all the things. So happy Father's Day, but way more importantly, Am Yisrael Chai.
Am Yisrael Chai. See you soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Keep you posted. Check out Aliyah Return Center.
Absolutely.